Any views, thoughts, or opinions expressed on the Rejuvenating Health podcast are solely that of the speakers and are intended as such. Please contact your trusted medical practitioner for medical advice. Let's go, girls.
Hey, ladies, welcome back to the Rejuvenating Health podcast. I'm Shauna, and as always, I'm joined with women's health nurse practitioner, Lindsay Van Schoik. And today we have one of our clients on, Molly, and we're super excited to have her on today just to tell you about her journey inside Rejuvenating.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So Molly's been with us for 6 months. She just finished her initial 6 months and is going to continue on with us for the next year. So we're super excited about that. But I think let's just start with, like, what's your backstory? Like, what made you start with Rejuvenating Health?
Yeah. So, oh my gosh. Kind of a long story, but basically my life has been a yo-yo. So starting, like, when I was little, I always struggled with my weight. You know, I saw my friends who we ate the same thing, but they were all just these string beans, and that was never me. And so growing up, like, I got made fun of a lot for my weight, so I was already really insecure. And then fast forward to high school, that's when things really started getting kind of taking a darker turn. I got to a point in high school where I was like 90 pounds and just had so much anxiety around food and about, you know, if I ate a bite of something, I was just convinced that I was going to get fat. And I was going to always be this fat little insecure kid. Like, that was my identity and nothing was ever going to change that. So I struggled a lot with that in high school. And I remember one time having a teacher, and this was when I was like 90 pounds, having a teacher come up to me and tell me, oh, if you gained one more pound, you're going to have to buy new pants. And that that just really solidified that idea that, okay, I can't eat anything, I'm going to gain weight. Like, it was just horrible. And so I had all of this anxiety around food and my image, and obviously being super underweight and not eating well, my periods were so messed up and I had these awful, awful periods. And so at the ripe age of 13, they never officially diagnosed me with endometriosis because they felt like the diagnosis process was going to be too invasive for a kid.
Surgery.
But but I had all of the quote unquote symptoms. So they said I had endometriosis, and then they went ahead and put me on birth control at 13. And I had been on birth control pretty much ever since. And that just also, you know, obviously messed up a lot of stuff. But then fast forward to college, things never got better. And that identity crisis that I had about just being this insecure, chubby little kid just furthered and got super underweight, was still super underweight in college. But now my diet consisted of nothing but, you know, horrible cafeteria food and then vodka. That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
But then especially being in college though, like, something kind of flipped, and this was the first time I really experienced that big yo-yo. And, you know, they say like the freshman 15, well, for me, it was like the freshman 25, suddenly being in a dorm and having, you know, unlimited access, almost like being on a cruise ship. Like, no matter what time it is, you can go find food, and it's never healthy food. So that was my first experience with putting on a lot of weight because I just had no idea about nutrition or what my body needed or anything. And I'm still having these crazy periods, which through all of that, anytime that I would go and talk to the doctor about, you know, things are still not better, I still have these horrible symptoms, they would just put me on a different pill. So I think over the course of the
never talked about nutrition, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh. No, definitely not. And I mean, clearly could see that I wasn't eating well. And I remember, I think in the last 12 years, I've probably been on 9 different birth control pills, back and forth from a regular pill, and then the mini pill, and then the depo shot, and then an implant, like all this different stuff, because it's just, oh, well, let's just put you on something else. And so clearly, you know, never worked. But then, in college, it got really bad as far as just my diet yo-yoing. And that's really, I just went to a really dark place. Like, just mentally, college was really, really hard for me, being around all these other, especially being around all these other girls. And I really felt like at that point, my relationship with food was already really screwed up, but also I was starting to put my worth and my value in how others saw me, and especially how guys saw me. And so that's already just a horrendous way for any young woman to live. But that on top of things, you know, I rushed and was accepted into a sorority, but my social anxiety was so bad that I couldn't do it. And I ended up my sophomore year of being at Butler, I ended up coming home from Christmas break and then just never going back. And so I came home and just, it was like suddenly being home and not having those societal pressures. I just ate and ate and ate. And that's where I found my comfort. And I would say over the course of the next maybe 4 years, I put on like 50, 60 pounds. Mm-hmm. And so fast forward to 2019, I got married to my husband. And this was really another wake up call for me. So we got married in September. And in March of that year, I decided, okay, I really want to lose weight and get ready for this wedding. And which right away was my first mistake, because I feel like number one, I was setting myself up for failure because I had this end goal and it was 100% just based on what was on the scale. It had nothing to do with anything else. And number two, I didn't care at all how I felt. Like, I just wanted to look good in the dress. Mm-hmm. So I started actually working with a nutrition coach in March, I think, of 2019, and thought things were going to be great. She had me tracking things in my Fitness Pal, but I was limited to 1200 calories a day. So I was absolutely miserable. We didn't really talk about protein or like what those 1200 calories needed to look like. And so, I mean, yeah, I was losing weight, but very slowly, but I was just miserable. Like, I was miserable to be around, I'm sure, but also I was miserable. And so about 3 months into that, I plateaued. And so the response to that was, okay, let's drop you down to 1,000 calories. Mm-hmm. So I was eating 1,000 calories a day. And, you know, in my Fitness Pal, it lights up red when you try to log your day if you don't go over 1,000 calories. And so me, I'm an all or nothing person. Like, I say all the time, I'm like a recovering perfectionist because I'm a very type A, like, Lindsay has to remind me, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? Yeah. And so I got in this mindset of, okay, so less must always be better. So it became my goal. I would end up trying to sneak in under 1,000 calories on my Fitness Pal. And then I would have to add in, like, I had a couple foods that I could add in that I didn't actually eat just to fluff it up so I could send it to my nutrition coach just so she could see it. So my relationship with food just got, it was already bad. It got a lot worse. Mm-hmm. And then come to my wedding day. So, I mean, I was working with a coach for a while, and over that time I lost, I think, a total of 18 pounds. So it wasn't even, I mean, it wasn't this crazy impressive amount or anything. Yeah, and it was done.
Metabolism.
Yes. And it was done like the completely wrong way. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so then on my wedding day, like, I never did reach my goal weight, quote unquote goal weight. And when I got the wedding pictures back, all I could think was, man, I would look so much better if I had gotten on my goal weight. So just a horrible thought process behind things. Mm-hmm. And then after my wedding, it was like, okay, pressure's off. I don't have anything to quote unquote look good for. So that's when I really started turning back to food for comfort. And after being restricted for so long, it was like my body just, I wanted nothing but carbs and sugar and all the not so great stuff. And so I indulged in it and I never stopped. And so when I started working with Lindsay and rejuvenating this year, so in 2023, I had topped out at actually right before I had started working with her, because I had dropped just a little bit right before, but right before starting working with you guys, I think I was 205 is what I got up to. That was my heaviest. And that was not pregnant weight or anything. That was just me. And for being like barely 5 feet tall, you know, that's not great. And obviously just looking at me, like, doctors could tell, but every time I went in for these checkups and everything, nothing was said to me about, okay, what are you eating? And so it wasn't until working with you, Lindsay, that I realized, like, man, why did no one, and I know why they didn't take the time. It's because the system's not designed to take the time to ask those questions, but oh my gosh, like, so yeah, it all started actually in January of 2023. I was invited by my best friend to go to a local CrossFit gym for their CrossFit Open. And so I sat there and just fell in love with the community and came to a class with her shortly after and then never stopped going. And then it wasn't too long after that, I was going to these classes. I felt like I was going 3, 4, sometimes even 5 days a week, but the weight wasn't coming off. And somebody said, well, you can't outwork a bad diet. And then it all just kind of clicked for me. And I reached out to Lindsay and the rest is history.
Yeah, that's awesome.
There's a lot to unpack in this story. So let's go back to where the first mistake happened with birth control. And that, I see this all the time. I'll have moms bring in their daughters and it's not the mom's fault and it's not the daughter's fault. Mm-hmm. It's like what we were taught. And my daughter's having period cramps or her periods are irregular or she's bleeding a lot and they want me to just put them on birth control, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not the fix because we all know teenagers have a shitty lifestyle, right? Like they're not exercising appropriately. They're eating processed foods. And it's no wonder that they have terrible periods because they're constantly in an inflammatory state. Right? If you're eating all these processed foods, if you're not moving your body, you're in a pro-inflammatory state. Like we just talked about on our podcast last week about seed oils and how they're pro-inflammatory. So all of our teenagers live in this pro-inflammatory state and it's making their periods worse. Well, what does birth control do? It suppresses your natural hormones and it doesn't give you bioidentical hormones. It gives you synthetic hormones, which causes more of an inflammatory response, which causes more insulin resistance, which causes weight gain, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you're switching to all these other birth controls. Like the number one side effect of Depo is an increased appetite, right? Yep. It doesn't cause you to gain weight, but it makes your appetite increase. And so we're setting you up for failure right from the start instead of trying to figure out what's going on with your periods or giving you a supplement regimen of fish oil and zinc and aspirin and magnesium to help with those period cramps. So birth control is great if you truly need it or if you need birth control to not get pregnant, but just to put it on a teenager to mask symptoms is a huge problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you got set up from the get-go there. Then second, how did I not know that you went to Butler?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So I went to Butler too, and not good eating disorder. That is a very high pressure school. I love Butler. But it is a very high, you don't go there if you don't have, it's affluent, right? Like it's very expensive to go there. A lot of the people there, are very perfectionist. And so it puts you in this right off the bat, this thing.
Yeah.
This rush of sorority there is definitely,
So coming in and I was there on a full, not a full scholarship, but a pretty big scholarship for academics. Again, you know, that type A personality.
Yeah.
And so being there and then suddenly too, it was the first time in my life I ever actually had to study and I didn't know how to study. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly I wasn't doing so well in classes. I was in the physician assistant program and I was already accepted into the 6-year thing. So like you get one C and you're out. So just that pressure on top of everything else. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like I love it, but I was not ready for it. And that on top of some other things, it was a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. I mean, that's the same thing I was like, I was accepted to their pharmacy program. So, you know, 6 years, but in high school, I was in all the advanced classes. So I was done with my freshman year by the time I went to college. And then you get thrown into organic chemistry your freshman year and you don't know how to study in calculus.
Yep.
It's like, nope, you're done. Yep.
Yep. Chemistry is what got me. Yep.
Yep. Same. Same. So I feel you on that. But I don't think we prepare our teenagers enough into going what the pressures of college is or that freedom of living on your own and the
It's a lot. Body. And something else, and like I know this is kind of unrelated, but something else is, you know, I grew up always being, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but like I grew up always being praised for doing a good job. And everything I did was really good. And I was a great test taker. And so, like I said, you know, never really learned to study, but I feel like I grew up always being good at things. So the second I wasn't good at something, which is totally fine, but the second I wasn't good at something, I just spiraled. And so, you know, recently I was listening to a podcast and I don't remember who it was that said this, but they said, you know, we really need to start talking about failures with our kids. And at the dinner table, like, what did you fail at today? Because it's okay. What did you try that you weren't good at today? Let's talk about that. And I just never had that. And I think that was another thing that just kind of set me up too.
Yeah, that set you up for that perfectionist tendencies, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So then we like poor relationship with food. We go to the nutrition coach. So here's why you can't just hire a nutrition coach off of Instagram, right? There is a time and a, like I am all about everyone wanting to help people with their food and nutrition, but just because something worked for you doesn't mean that you have the credentials to go coach someone on nutrition. Mm-hmm. And you can cause a lot of harm to someone if you don't know what you're doing, right? And so this idea of macro counting and putting everything in your mouth and giving you a calorie count can lead to really disordered eating if it's not done the right way. And can it really disrupt your metabolism? And I'm sure that you were on birth control at that point too. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, you know, no one was addressing those underlying emotional stuff that you had going on with food or inflammatory responses that you were having. Just your period was saying it all. So I could try to caution everyone, like, it might be cheaper to work with someone that like, even not trying to knock MLMs and stuff like that, but those people are not trained in nutrition and they're not trained in any of that type of stuff. So I remember like when we first started working together, you're like, I don't have to track my food. Like
it was a shock.
It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because I had also tried after my wedding and then when I gained all that weight and kind of did a lot of yo-yoing in between there and now, but you know, I tried Weight Watchers. I tried Noom, tried Nutrisystem, tried keto, like, but everything, even as far as using like the ketosis strips and like everything requires such diligent tracking. I mean, I literally kept a food scale in my car and that I can't live my life like that.
Yeah. No, I can't. I've been there. And two, when you're tracking the macros, it's, you know, whatever fits in your macros. So I know when I was tracking my macros, I was eating, but it didn't matter what I was eating to me.
Exactly.
As long as I was hitting that number, oh, cool. I have this many of this left. I'm going to have some Oreos at the end of the night because it fits my macros. They're not teaching you the proper nutrition to fit in those macros. It's just whatever fits, you know?
Yeah. And the timing too, like probably one of the biggest things that clicked for me is I've always struggled getting into a deep sleep. And to the point where I've had sleep studies, they've confirmed that, like you just don't get into a deep sleep for a while, which just left me so tired, so fatigued. For a while, I had a doctor telling me that I had chronic fatigue syndrome. And then I had another doctor tell me that I needed to get tested for narcolepsy because I was so tired all the time. Well, no, it's because my last meal of the day would be 15 minutes before I would go to bed.
Yeah.
And so the second I heard that from you, Lindsay, like we need to have, and now I'm 3 hours, like it's gotta be 3 hours for me. And now that I've started doing that, I'm so much more well rested. I mean, I have a whoop, so I always kind of keep track of my sleep in some way, shape or form. And I know it's not perfect, but I mean, my deep sleep has just, the amount of deep sleep I get has skyrocketed and I'm so much more well-rested. I could get my 6 hours. If I get 6 hours now, that's way better than the 9 hours I was getting before. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
No one awesome. Talked to me about any of that.
I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. That food really, I think people really forget that digestion and sleep are the same nervous system, like the same parasympathetic nervous system. So if you're eating right before you go to bed, you're not going to get in that deep sleep. And I know that was one of the things that we changed right off the bat for you.
Yeah.
Whoa, you cannot eat and go straight to bed.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so we started with lab work with you, like we do with everyone. And it's not like your lab work was crazy bad. Like if you went to the doctor and they looked at your lab work, they'd be like, it's fine, Molly. Oh, yeah. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah, no, I had a panel done not too awful long before that. So I had my daughter in September of 2022. And so I had lab work throughout 2022. And I mean, obviously being pregnant changes some things, but for the most part, I mean, no, everything was totally fine. I remember when my blood work with you came back, one of the big things we talked about was blood sugar levels. Mm-hmm. And when I had my glucose test being pregnant, they were like, oh no, it's fine. And it was not fine.
Yeah,
no, I've always been normal, quote unquote.
Yeah. So when we started with you, we always do a full panel of labs, right? So your fasting blood glucose was 109, which if you went to the doctor, they'd probably be like, you know, that's a little bit high. They want it under 100. My cutoff is 85. I really want it to be under 85, your hemoglobin A1C was 5.5, which if you went to the doctor, they'd be like, that's, you know, that's fine. You're not diabetic, which in reality, we want it kind of under 5.2. And then your insulin was 13, which again, doesn't scream like terrible, but in my world, insulin, we want under 6, right? So you were starting to show all these signs of insulin resistance and prediabetes. And if your blood sugars are high like that, you can't lose weight, right? So that was one thing. Your vitamin D was crazy low, which leads to fatigue, right? And you had inflammation going on in your body, like your CRP was elevated. And so you kind of just had this inflammatory response, which was causing maybe your blood sugars to be higher, all that type of stuff. So it's not like you had all these crazy things going on, but you had enough going on that if we didn't take care of it, you were going to be weight loss resistant, which you kind of were, and you were going to lead down this road of chronic disease, right? Like your testosterone levels were great. Your hormone levels were great. We just had some, like your thyroid is optimal, but we just had some issues going on there. And so I think it's not like we made crazy dramatic changes, right? Like we fixed your insulin resistance and we fixed an inflammatory response that you had going on.
So I'm down like 55 pounds and I just have so much more energy and I am actually present with my family. That's the biggest thing is now at the end of the day after work, like I can sit and have a conversation and not think, oh my gosh, I just want to go to bed. I don't just think about going to bed at night. That's, you know, before that was it. I was just so exhausted mentally and physically and I'm not now. And it's just, it's been this whole new world. And at one point my husband said to me, and this was kind of a really powerful point for me was probably 4 months in, he looked at me and he said, I feel like I'm getting my wife back. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So it's been
awesome. That's amazing.
Yeah. I think even more than that, like I know you struggled a lot with anxiety and depression. And so the weight loss that you've had is remarkable. And I can't wait to do your labs in a few weeks, like and see the changes that we've had, but you've gotten off medicines.
Yes.
Anxiety and depression. Yeah. So talk about that.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So I've always been on anxiety and depression medication, which absolutely there's a time and a place for it. I'm not against it at all. But I feel like for me, a lot of that stuff was just, again, you know, we're treating the symptoms, not the causes. And once, especially after cleaning up nutrition and then getting regular movement in, that was probably the biggest thing for me was getting that regular movement in. My anxiety levels just plummeted and I was able to completely go off of an anxiety medication. I was able to go completely off of a prescription heartburn medication, which was costing me close to $200 a month. So I was really excited to go off of that. But I mean, I had had horrible heartburn pretty much my entire life. I mean, everyone joked that I was 26 going on 86. Because I carried around Tums like in my purse and my car everywhere. And I couldn't even tell you last time I took Tums, like completely no heartburn whatsoever. Anxiety and depression depression and anxiety has really decreased. It's just been this incredible change. The external changes have been huge. The internal changes have been just so beyond that. And just absolutely incredible. I had no idea how good I could feel. I mean, I'm 26 years old and I felt like my 20s, you know, you always hear, oh, the 20s and 30s are the prime of your life. And I felt like I was completely losing that and missing that. And I'm like, man, I just feel like shit all the time. And it hasn't been until the last 6 months that I've realized, oh no, this is what feeling good feels like. And it's just crazy.
And I think it's important for people to realize it's not like I made you, or I don't make anyone do anything, but it's not like I went in and like rocked your whole world. It's not like my Molly, you have to spend hours in the kitchen cooking every day. And you know,
oh my gosh, no. We were just talking about this on Wednesday. I'm really bad at meal prep. And so if I can make it work, anybody can make it work. I'm telling you. It was just a matter of making just conscientious decisions and choices about things, but more than anything, understanding why you feel the way you do about food. And I mean, even going through and kind of sharing my story, my background, there are still some things that it's like, man, I didn't realize just how messed up things were until I say it out loud and hear some of it. But yeah, no, none of the things that we changed or did were life altering, restricting. That's the biggest thing, is nothing has been restricting. I eat more now probably than I ever have before, but I'm eating the right things. And I was even telling Lindsay earlier, you know, like we had Thanksgiving yesterday, and one of my all time favorite things is sweet potato casserole and just absolutely obscene amount of sugar, because that's the way you make it and that's how it's good. Right. But I even got to the point, like, that's what I look forward to every year, is just my sweet potato casserole. And I couldn't even finish one little serving of it because it was just way too sweet. And my body's just not used to that anymore. So also, you know, nothing ever gets easier. This is a big thing I hear a lot when I talk to people, is, oh, it gets easier the longer you do it. I would beg to differ. I don't think it gets easier, but you get stronger and your body changes and your body adapts. And so, yeah, it does feel like it's getting easier because I'm no longer craving these things that I was craving before. But now it's just a matter of, okay, get your water in, get your protein in, get your veggies in. Everything else kind of falls into place.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, I think people think that of me too, like, well, it's easy for you. And I'm like, no, it is not easy when my alarm goes off at 4 a.m. to get out of bed. And I mean, you're doing that now too. Like, you switched your routine and you're getting up early and exercising to start your day off. Like, it doesn't get any easier to get up
in the
morning, right?
And you have kids and a job. Like,
you still have
all those things.
You are mentally stronger and you're like, no, I know I feel the best when I'm doing this. So it doesn't get easy. Like, it might get easier to choose the vegetables over the sweets because you know what you're going to feel like if you eat the sweets.
Yes. Yes.
But you're also making it a lifestyle. So you're just living, you learn to live it day in and day out, which essentially also would make it feel easier.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So that right there is probably the biggest thing for me, is I truly feel like I have fallen in love with the lifestyle. And the only way you can fall in love with a lifestyle is if it's something you can maintain. And if it's realistic, if it wasn't realistic, if it wasn't something that I could maintain, you know, there's no way I would feel this way. Like having to log 1,000 calories into my fitness pal, that's not realistic or sustainable. But the lifestyle is really what I've fallen in love with, getting up and going to the gym and, you know, eating the good foods and drinking all the water and having the protein, but it's become enjoyable for me. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I was missing before. And what I would venture to say a lot of people miss is we have such a focus on this end goal, right? I want to be X amount of pounds by this date. And that's all we focus on. But in reality, I mean, what's going to happen when you hit that goal? You're going to step on the scale, look at the number. That happiness that you feel is going to last for what, 5 minutes? And then what? And then you're right back where you were. So if you don't fall in love with that journey to get there, that lifestyle getting there, it's something that's really hard. I mean, you are going to yo-yo. It is going to be this constant uphill battle. So I think for me, probably the reason, one of the big reasons that I have had success with it and why I feel so happy and joyful about it is because I fall in love with the process. Like, it's truly become a lifestyle and part of who I am. And now when I travel, like, I seek out gyms that I can go to because that's what I do now, is I'm a person that works out. I'm a person that makes good food choices. And it's not just something looking for this end goal.
Yeah. And how amazing that at 26, like, you're doing it at 26. So you're already setting yourself up for, like, when I was 26, I was doing what you were doing before that. Like, I was up and down and starving myself. And so you're so much further ahead. So you should be proud of yourself for taking those steps at such a young age. Like, that's great. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, it was definitely because of having my daughter. Like, after having her, I realized I'm setting her up for failure because this is what she's going to see. And I can't do that. And I love my mom. My mom had a very unhealthy relationship with food. Growing up, it was normal. Eat a whole bag of potato chips and then hate yourself for it afterwards. That's just what you do. And so I knew I can't let her do this. I can't let her feel the way that I felt. And that was another big thing that sparked that change.
Yeah.
But I think, like, from a coaching perspective, like, you're the perfect client because you took on this identity, right? Yeah. You aren't someone that was like, oh, Lindsay, the scale is stuck, right? Like, I haven't, like, you hardly ever talk to me about the scale. Like, I literally don't know that much until you're like, oh, I've lost 50, you know what I mean? But you've truly taken on this identity of a healthy person, right? And a healthy person doesn't look for shortcuts, and they're not focusing on the scale, and they're not focusing on this all or nothing approach. And so I see a lot of that with some of our clients that aren't having the best results. And I'm like, you're constantly looking, what can I tweak next? What can I do next? Like, what can I do? Mm-hmm. And you're not getting the basics down, and you're not doing the things like lifting heavy and sleeping and not eating before bed and cutting out your sweets. Like, if you're constantly looking for this next thing or the quick fix, like, this is a lifestyle change, and you have to change your identity. And what would a healthy person do? They're going to get up and go to the gym. They're going to go to bed. They're going to do all of these things. And so you've really taken it on as your identity.
Yeah. And I think probably for me, the biggest thing, because I'm a person that very much wants to be in control, and I tell this. So I coach sales teams and businesses virtually across the country. And this is a big thing we talk about, is you got to focus on the things you can control. And the reality is there's not a whole lot you can control, but the things you can control are huge. And so the things you can control is, so I tell them, you know, your skill set. So the things that you're doing to make yourself better. What are you listening to? What are you reading? You put good in, you're going to get good out. You put junk in, you're going to get junk out, right? Yep. So your skill set, your activity. So also, you know, in the business world, it's about, you know, how many quotes, how many calls, pivots, things like that. But on a personal level, it's, okay, what are the things that you're doing? Are you meal prepping? And I know that's the weak point for me, but are you doing some kind of food planning where you know what you're going to eat the next day? Are you setting yourself up for success there? But then the third thing is your attitude. And it's how you respond to the things you can't control. And so the number on the scale, I mean, yeah, you can control the factors that affect that. But at the end of the day, like, I can't magically change that number. But what I can change are the things that I'm putting in my mouth every day, or, you know, going for a walk. And so something that really helped me a while back, both in professional life and personal life, is every morning I make a list of three things. And these are, I call them the win the day list. And it's three things that for me will make it a good day. But these three things have to be three things that are in my control. So they can't have anything else. They can't have anything to do with anybody else or any outside factors. So it might be something like go for a 30-minute walk, or, you know, make it to the gym today, or, you know, have the chicken breast for lunch, whatever it may be. But there are three things that I'm in control of that no one else is in control of. And when I focus on those things, everything else just kind of falls into place.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. You're so wise at your young age.
Look
well,
at you, Molly.
Thank you. I can honestly say, though, it's because I've surrounded myself with other coaches and people. I mean, like, a lot of this I've learned from you, Lindsay, and I know a lot of this, Shauna, Lindsay, I hear on your guys' podcast.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, hearing it and hearing it from a different source. But also, I've got a business coach, and then working in the coaching world on the business side of things, you know, we spend a lot of time on mindset. So, but I listen to a lot of podcasts and read a lot of books. I'm very, very adamant that when you put good in, you will get good out. And there was a long time where I would spend my entire day binge watching Netflix. And when you put good in your brain, other facets of your life definitely show that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think my last question for you is, like, doing this was not a small investment, right? Like, you had to invest time and energy and finances, and it was a lot for a 26-year-old to do. And I think we live in a world where we'd rather invest in vacations and golf carts or side-by-sides, or I don't know. We live in this really small town where people don't want to invest in themselves. I think I'm really proud of you for taking that step at 26, but
thank you.
What would you say to someone that's like, I can't do that? Like, it always baffles my mind, because I'm like, my body is my home and I will do whatever it takes, but I have a different mindset, I know, than a lot of people. So what are your thoughts surrounding that?
When you save $200 a month on your one medication alone.
Right. Well, that's another thing I was talking to Lindsay about, is, and we know that $200 a month for a medication honestly is nothing compared to what a lot of people are spending on their medications. And so when you look at it that way, I mean, shoot, it will pay for itself over time. And it absolutely will pay for itself when you don't end up with that chronic illness or chronic disease. And when you don't end up on these thousands of dollars a month prescriptions for things that were totally preventable. But for me, it's okay. So yes, your body is your home. You've got to take care of yourself. But for me too, like if that's hard for you to kind of grasp, but I know it is for a lot of women, it's kind of hard for me too, is okay, look at your kids. They are watching you. They are imitating you. They are, even when you don't realize it, I mean, they are watching your every move. And is that really how you want them to live their life? Because as moms, I think we are setting the tone. We are setting the example for our children and especially our daughters. And, you know, the words and the language you use with yourself, even though you say, oh, I just think these things, I don't say them out loud. I don't care. Like if you're even thinking these negative self-image thoughts and things, that absolutely gets reflected in your actions and your daughter sees that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look in the mirror and say, oh, I just hate how I look, or I look real fat today, or, you know, something like that. Okay. Your daughter is being told constantly that she looks like you. So what does that say to her? And so you got to get right for your kids. If you don't want to do it for yourself, fine, but do it for your children. You've got to do it for your children. But the other thing I would say is if you look at the cost and you really break it down, it's justifiable. And it is a lot. Like I'm not going to make any bones about it. It's an investment, but the best investment you can make is an investment in yourself. And I know for me, another turning point was my husband and I are both self-employed, so we no longer had work health benefits. And looking at the health insurance that we did end up with, man, we can't afford to get sick. We just can't. And the only way to prevent that is to change how we're living. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you think money, and this is a big thing, like if you think money is tight now, trust me, I get it. I've been there. I understand. I really do. Hear my heart when I say that. But how much harder is it going to be when you're in and out of the hospital? How much harder is it going to be for your family when your medications just to keep you feeling decent are $8,000 a month? Mm-hmm. You know, is it easier to come up with an extra couple hundred dollars a month now, or is it going to be easier to come up with several thousand dollars a month later? The answer is a couple hundred dollars a month now.
Yeah, exactly.
Insurance is not going to get any cheaper or get any better coverage.
Oh my gosh. No, it's going to continue to go up. It's going to continue to get worse. Deductibles are going to get larger. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And we live in a society that is obese. Like 94% of our country has metabolic disease. Right. And you fell in that category, right? Your doctor mm-hmm. wouldn't have told you that, but by my like functional medicine standards, like you had metabolic disease. You were on that train to be on medicines long-term.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And just also, what are you, and this is a big question I ask some of my clients too, is what are you spending X amount of dollars a day on or X amount of dollars a week on? Break it down into daily and weekly costs. I mean, we all spend a stupid amount of money on things that we don't need every single week. Oh my gosh. I went to Starbucks the other day and for two drinks, it was $18. Yeah, and that just absolutely gutted me. So, okay. What are you spending $18 a day on?
Yeah,
that's more important than this for yourself and for your family. And I'd be willing to venture the answer is nothing. Because I know that was a question I'd ask myself.
Yeah.
And you're proof that like you're not going to get it in the conventional healthcare world. It's just not set up that way. Right?
No. I love my doctor. She is probably one of the most holistic doctors at the organization I go to. And I know, Lindsay, you're familiar with it. But yeah, it's just the system's not designed, and you guys talk about this a lot. It's just not designed to do that.
Yeah.
You're doing awesome.
I'm so proud of you. Can't
wait. Well, thank you so much. I'm really excited for the next year. Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, we're going to end it with, I'm going to ask Molly my question.
Oh yeah. Duh.
Yeah. Molly, you probably know it because you listen to the podcast, but if you could be one Disney princess, which Disney princess would you be?
So I was very prepared for this answer and I almost put together like a PowerPoint presentation as to why my answer is what it is, but Sleeping Beauty, 100%. So I grew up just absolutely obsessed with Sleeping Beauty. I had the little pink dress and I would wear it every day when I would watch it. I remember the worst day of my life was when the tape came unspooled from the VHS tape from watching it too much. Yeah, that was absolutely devastating. But no, definitely Sleeping Beauty. And if you ask anybody that knows me, they will tell you that sleeping is probably my favorite hobby and my favorite pastime.
Yeah, so you and Lindsay are in the same boat. Both of our Sleeping Beauties.
Hey, so we both get up really early and go to the gym.
Yeah,
we do. We do. And man, I'm telling you, if Molly Kubo can get up in the morning and make it to the gym, anybody can.
Love it.
Well, this has been awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Molly, for sure. This has been so awesome. And like Lindsay said, we're so proud of you and we can't wait to see what this next year brings you. But
thank you,
ladies. Yeah. And thank you, ladies, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a kind review and a 5-star rating because it helps us out a lot. And we will catch you next week. See ya.
Bye.